want to talk about a subject that was something Rudy discussed a great deal. And it's called death and rebirth. And one of the things Rudy said about spiritual practice and the process of growing and evolving as a spiritual person was that in order to grow, evolve, expand, much of what defines you as a person, much of what holds you in place, much of what you call your identity, yourself, needs to fall away. I've explained this a lot to you, but so much of who we are is built on a foundation that a four-year-old laid. You are the creation of something that started very early on, and for most people is never re-examined during the course of their lives. They just want what that four-year-old wanted. A certain kind of love, a certain kind of acknowledgement, a certain kind of affection. And they keep struggling for it in the same ways that they did then. If they wanted it from their mother, suddenly they want somebody who represents mother. Or they wanted it from the teacher, now suddenly everyone outside who has teacherly aspect, they need to get that reaffirmation from, I'm smart, I'm intelligent, I am whatever it is you're looking for, I am beautiful, I am stupid, I am lazy, whatever the things are that you created as a construct that keep reappearing and reinforcing themselves throughout your life, spiritual life gives you a new perspective. It allows you to sit down and relax the hold of your mind over your identity. And you start to see, as parts of you fall away, that you are not as burdened as you imagined. You are not as held in place as you think. That you can start to really let go of the you that you created. The you that you created had a great purpose. It had to essentially find footing in this material world. How do I function? How do I live in this space? How do I get by? How do I get enough love? How do I get enough attention? How do I get enough energy? How do I make sure that the world serves my needs? The me, 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 I, that's at the core of being a person in the world, and at the absolute center of being 2 years old, 3 years old, 4 years old. And those skills and those techniques that you got built you. And they were crucial. But part of evolution, part of growing up, is letting go of that stuff. And some of it we do relatively effectively, and some of it we don't do, and much of it we don't do with any grace or elegance. But the spiritual process is really a starting to re-identify who we are with something deeper and bigger than this ego-minded self. And when that deeper part of you starts to express itself, it's like outgrowing the old stuff, and it cracks, and it starts to decompose and fall away, and it's not always attractive, but you're breaking out of a skin. It's like a snake shedding its skin. It really is what happens. It's the cocoon, and you emerging from a cocoon. And that process involves the death of what you were or what you identified with. And for some people, it is absolutely the worst and most uncomfortable experience imaginable. You do not want to give up the familiar, the comfortable, or even the uncomfortable familiar, because it is who you know and what allows you to get through the day. Who would I be without all my crap? Who would I be? How would I function? better not to know is really what many people choose. Just allow yourself to be the crazy construct that this four-year-old put together, or even an 18-year-old. But whatever that is, if you're going to practice spiritual development, you'll have to let it go. And when it goes, you will experience what Rudy called death. The death of your familiar, knowable self. And as it starts to fall away, if you have a grounded spiritual practice, you will let it go. If it starts to fall away and you're not grounded in your spiritual practice, it will start to try to reconstruct itself and often succeed. I've termed this yo-yo yoga. Falls away, comes back, falls away, comes back, over and over and over and over until you say, this practice doesn't work, or this teacher is no good. And so you just walk away from what you're doing. But the real practice is allowing yourself to die, to allow parts of you to fall away. And as you will probably realize in the process, what falls away is well-bidden farewell, goodbye. But because it's familiar, because it's the you that you've known, it's very hard to let it go. And when it starts to go, you will find this is true with everything you let go of. Nothing becomes more precious than in the moments it's going away. The apartment you never loved suddenly never looks better than when you leave it. It's our nature. It's our nature to fall in love with the thing we're losing. But letting it go is essential. And what it feels like when you let it go is complete shit. It's the worst. There's nothing comfortable about letting go of who you were. And you will experience a kind of divine suffering. Rudy said you'll feel like you're at the bottom of the pecking order. Everything in life that can pick on you will pick on you. It'll be like Mercury in retrograde. All your computers will stop working. Your phone won't work properly. Everything will be awful. And you will be without any kind of help that you can think of, because the help you want is to recreate what was. And that's not what's happening. What's happening is the recreation, let me put it this way, the new creation of who you are. As your old patterns disintegrate and fall away, you will experience suffering, because there will be a scramble in your mind for what now? What do I hold on to? Where is my grounding? Where is my footing? How do I get through the day without me? How will I function? One of the key ingredients of death and rebirth is that when you're in the death throes, you will not be conscious of it. You will not be able to label it usually as death. You will just think of it as depression. You'll think of it as all your old dramas coming up, all your old stuff coming up again. You'll feel miserable. Rudy's prescription for that was eat a Hershey bar. Get a chocolate sundae. Do something. Just treat yourself well, because it's a process. And the death process has duration. It is really not unlike the sap in a tree going back into the root system in the winter, coming back in the spring, and the tree becoming twice as big and beautiful as it was before. This is a natural process. The only thing about a spiritual practice is that it encourages it to happen more frequently, more readily. And if you are really growing spiritually, you hand yourself over to this process. You do it with some grace. At the core of our practice is this desire, this wish that says, please help me to surrender. It is a wish to free yourself. It is a wish to let go. It is a wish to be free. It is a wish to be open. And asking for help to surrender is really valuable when you are going through this deep, deep suffering that comes from dying. I'm going to take this a little bit further, just because I think it's will be important to some of you along the way. Ego death, which is really what we're talking about, ego death is the loss of parts of your identity. Rarely, but occasionally, it's the loss of your entire ego mind. My experience, as I've said many times, was 45 years of dropping off parts of this Bruce guy. And then finally, at one moment, quite unexpectedly, the last piece fell away. And there was just nothing left. But that wasn't totally true. The Bruce guy wasn't left, but all the rest of this was. It's just there wasn't a Bruce in the center. There just was all of this, period. There is no center. There only is. And that is phenomenally present. The tiny ego mind that thinks it's everything suddenly gives way to what is everything. And there you are, what you'll call totality. Totality, which is both known and unknown. What's really fascinating about the known totality is that it's based on what you feel, what you experience, and a kind of remarkable sense of presence. There is this emanating presence, and at the core of this presence is something, I would call it a kind of embrace. It's an embrace, it's a powerful acceptance of what is. It's a yes to life. It's a yes to being. It's a yes to existence. And it has as part of its flavor a kind of flowering, expansive, immersive, unfolding reality. It's hard to believe how big it gets or how big it is. It's hard to believe that every time you think you are in some ways aware, greater awareness occurs. Every time you think there's a known, it becomes an unknown. Every time you think there's a handle, it disintegrates. There is nothing to hold on to. There is only the infinite what is that is never the same thing twice. You will learn when you arrive at this place that it is endlessly instructive, endless discovery. And every so often, there will be a sense of aha, like you get it. Trust me, you do not get it. There is nothing to be gotten. Every moment of getting, even at this vast expanse, is a temporary flash of insight, but it's not in any way complete. There is no completion. It just goes on and on. The last few weeks for me have been unexpectedly painful, full of what I would call suffering and a very big disconcerted feeling that the world that I know is completely falling away. And I realize in talking to people, in reading in the newspaper, I'm not alone in this feeling, that the known world is we can call it shifting, altering, changing, evaporating. We don't know. Something very big and global is going on, and something actually universal is going on. In my own personal life, and I know it's hard to understand what that means, when somebody talks about a personal life after they talk about having an awakening or an enlightenment or no longer being the person. But let me just clarify a little bit. Awakening does not rob you of who you are. It just puts it in perspective. What used to be the center of the universe is now an obscure little molecule in a vast cosmos of existence, and you are suddenly the cosmos and the molecule. As I was saying in the introductory class today, I don't care how cosmologically vast you become, if I were to hold your breath for 4 minutes or 5 minutes, that molecule will express itself with enormous immediacy and disturbance. Even the most enlightened beings are biological creations for a period of time. That biology exerts a hold, and it is important. We are all creatures that are created and uncreated. We are all infinite and temporary at the same time. We are this extraordinarily dualistic, non-dualistic reality. So, this week, I was in what I would call a period of death and death throes, full of exceedingly painful discomfort, sadness, grief. A lot of it based on real-world circumstance. I've talked about it in previous classes. I don't know who listens to my talks, but you know, a dear friend of ours lost a son and a granddaughter in a rogue wave thing in Hawaii that pulled them out to sea. The daughter first and the granddaughter, her son jumped in after the daughter and both of them were killed, drowned. Very personal. It suddenly became very personal to me. I'm unbearably personal. I mean, I have been living with this as though I am this woman who's a dear friend of ours. A lot of things going on in our personal life that are shaking up the solidity of the ground we walk on, and I'm not going to go into all of the drama because it's mostly surrounding me with my kids and their lives. And I don't want to, nothing horrible, but enough that there is no, everything we take as stable, everything we take as stable is not there. And then, of course, there were the Democratic and Republican conventions of the last 2 weeks, and I have somehow engaged all of that as part of the world I live in, the world I am. And it's a disconcerting universe. It's absolutely playing out in ways that it has never played out for in this lifetime, in this particular lifetime. And now this is my world. These are my forces. I mean, not Bruce exactly, and they are collective. They are a collective series of forces that are destabilizing things as we know it. How it will end up, I do not know. It may all end up in a perfect final balance again. It may be ultimately very tumultuous. But all of this is playing out, and the relationship to it is very intense and discomforting. Bring it to the present moment. I sit with you in class, and the moment I sit down, something transformative occurs. A level of presence deeper than anything I've known arises, and it connects me to each of you in ways that is hard to describe. It's not unlike what happens in the normal class, but today it was like beyond anything I have known before. The word that came to me, because I didn't understand why in a position of such lostness, which is what I've been feeling, that such a feeling of being found and clarified had arisen. It's really like the rebirth is taking place, that the death process has had to happen. It had to begin to shatter the ground underneath my sense of familiar and comfortable, to begin to allow something totally new to arise. What began to arise in this class was a connectedness with each of you, and the sense that I got from it was how important you are to the world that is forming, and how much you were being made into what I will call warriors. Whether you accept that role or not is totally up to you, but you were presented today with the swords and the forces, the tools that you will need to do battle in the world. Not battle against the world, for the world. That the world needs you. I know this sounds kind of, you know, like Bruce the Dramatist, or here's another movie of some kind. But it's not that. It's not that. Something is going on. Something is going on. Who else is going to take responsibility? Who else is going to go out there and do the work? It's really interesting, you know. If you've ever read Lord of the Rings, why is it a little hobbit that's suddenly the one who has to save the world? Why is it in all great fiction, it's the reluctant hero? Nobody wants to go to the hero who wants to be the hero. That's not interesting. It's always the hero who doesn't want to be the hero, who wants anything but being the hero, who wants to live in their little hobbit life. But that's who gets the job. And you guys are getting the job. The job is be a warrior in this world. Be willing to go out there and fight through all the deaths and rebirths that you will go through and people around you will go through. There are certain key ingredients in this, really key ingredients. One is discipline. Discipline. Discipline is not choosing to act. Discipline is acting continually and regularly. As I said to some people today, discipline is not choosing to go to the gym, it's going to the gym. If you choose to go to the gym, you won't go. There will come a moment where you'll just go, oh, not today. 2 days of that and you're done with the gym. Discipline is doing. You do it. What does it mean, do it? Show up. Be present. Remember this connection. This energy that comes through this class, whatever it is, absolutely loves and loved and will love every one of you in ways that are unimaginable. And I cannot explain it. I don't know why you show up. I don't know why you're the ones who are here. But I will tell you, your being here was unbelievably powerful and connected, and it was invested with, if you will, the sword of whatever it is you need to slay the enemies that will surround you, the enemies of love, the enemies of hatred, the enemies that hate, let me put it that way, the enemies of sloth and laziness, all of those forces which need to be conquered by discipline. I would say discipline has got to become part of who you are. And when I say has to be, forget that. I don't care if you do or don't. But the universe cares. It just cares. And you have the power, and you have the skill, and you have the audacity, and you have the humility, and you have the hunger, and you have whatever it is that brings you here that you can now carry back into the world as someone who functions as a bearer of truth, or love, or kindness, or presence, or goodness. Whatever that is, it doesn't have to be more than that. You don't have to go out there slaying people, you know. You have to go out there and embracing the world. The power and the courage to love other people. The power and the courage to reach out. And that's going to be another one of the things I want to talk about. Reaching out. or I've never been good at it. I've always felt I don't want to be told no. If I reach out to somebody, I don't want them to say, oh, I'm too busy, or I can't, or not answer the phone, or whatever it is. And now I've really understood the power of reaching out is the only way to connect. If you have the courage to reach out to others, if they don't show up, then reach out to the next one. Somebody will go, hi, yeah, let's do it. Let's get together, let's be, let's have this. Whatever that is, comes from reaching out. And if you don't have that skill, learn it. And the only way to learn it is make the phone call this way anymore, make the phone call. Do whatever it is you have to do to engage the world. Engage the people who might benefit from the fact that you love them. Why should you hide that? Why should you keep it like, oh, they'll be upset, they have too many things to do. Why? No. Be the one who reaches out. Trust me, everyone else is trying to reach out to you and is terrified. They don't want to do it. They don't know how to do it. Be the one. Be that person. Discipline. Will. Willpower. It comes out of your navel chakra. Willpower is the fire in the belly to do stuff. This is a time to do. It's a really interesting thing about our particular practice. So many practices are not about doing, they're about being, or about sitting in the cave. Andrew and I were talking yesterday, and he came up with a really good line for this. When you're sitting in the cave away from the world, it's like asking for a free ride, he said. You don't have to engage the world. You can just sit there and the world will do what it does. You just get to sort of have a simple, quiet time, an easy time. I mean, it may not be that because the journey in is definitely effortful. But Rudy's teaching was your life is your spiritual life. It's not to leave the world to have it. It's to be in the world to live it. This is it. This is that spiritual life. And there is no free ride exactly. Other than the fact that when you really awaken, you realize it is a free ride. The whole thing is it's not free because you're called to action, but there's no individual call to action. There's no one to gain or lose from action. There's just action. Be in the world. Be the witness to the world. Be the doer in the world. Build bridges. Build connections. Love people. Reach out to people. Have a life. It won't even be you doing it. It will just be happening. And that happening is what the world wants. The you is the world that recoils. The you is that, oh, I don't think so. I'm not sure I should do that. The fear of loss, the fear of things not working. Get rid of that part and just enter into life fully. And you'll realize that you're not even doing it. It's just happening. That's the miracle of it all. It's just happening. There will come times in it, like I had this week, where every known comfort goes away. Everything you've trusted to rely on in your life suddenly is, you realize, not real. It has no substance. It is a bigger loss than you even imagine you could lose. Everything just, you're completely free-floating alone. I've talked about it before, but this idea that you have no more compass, you have no more rule book, nothing. And it is really bizarre. And then in that bizarreness, you're told, teach a class. And I did not want to teach today at all. And I was going to come in and not teach. I don't know what I was going to do exactly, but I didn't know how to approach it. But they don't give me that option. So I just sat down, and the minute I started teaching, teaching happened. And it's continuing to happen as I speak, because I don't know any of this stuff. It's just letting itself be known. And you are the guys who are hearing it and getting it. And trust me, the getting it, or whatever that is also resonating inside this structure that's speaking. I know that we have work to do in the world. That work has an aspect that's what I would call sitting quietly in meditation and discovering the depth of yourself. And the other part is being active in the world and letting that still point function brilliantly in the world around you. I've often spoken about how my whole career came out of stillness, that my ideas for stories to tell came out of nowhere, that when I would have to sell them to people in the studio system, I would sit in a room with all these people saying, "So what have you got?" And at that moment, I would always take my little cup of tea. They always offered you tea or coffee. So I'd have a cup of tea and I would wait a moment and put it down. And as I was lifting it to my lips and putting it down, they were in a state of stillness as well. They were like totally expectant. And that still, that 30 seconds of tea changed the equation of the room. And then this thing started to rise up and go out. And because my throat chakra over time had opened up, it was able to express what I thought and felt clearly. And I would walk away from all of these meetings over the course of a 30-year career with work, with jobs. And I got those jobs because this thing flowed. It happened. We can all have lives like that. We all can have lives that we want. It will deliver. It can deliver. It may not deliver your dream life. Be prepared for that. It may not deliver your dream life, but it will deliver what is supposed to be your life. And what is supposed to be your life is, trust me, more extraordinary than anything you can possibly imagine. And even everything you imagine will get thrown out the window. You will achieve a life of unbelievable presence, unbelievable showing up. You will be engaged in the world with extraordinary appreciation, consciousness, insight, wisdom, kindness, strength, power, all of the things that you had ever wanted to be when you were 4 years old. All the stuff you had imagined you could construct, you will realize have always been there. And once you deconstruct the ego mind, which is trying to own a piece of this, you will discover that you own the totality of it. And that the world, even though it's now yours on some level, doesn't make it peace and love and joy and easy. It's still a world of enormous dynamic, good and bad, light and dark, evil and goodness. All of that's at play, and trust me, that's who you are. You are that. In that, you have a particular corner, a particular piece that you are also directed to use. This is the warrior. This is who you are. This is who was, in a sense, ennobled today in the sitting here. You were given the sword that you need to take out of this room to live a life of conscious embattlement, if you will, for the forces of whatever it is you represent. And I don't know where any of this comes from. I don't know how it arises, what it is. I do know there are aspects to it. One of them is that all of this devolves into absolutely nothing. And all of this is the most important thing in the world. All at the same time. Inexplicable, unexplainable, unknowable, ungraspable truth. But it's truth, and it's happening. And you're in it, and you can fight the battle, or you can go sit in your house and watch TV. Anyway, the sword has been passed. Trust me, you got it today. You got it. You want it, it's yours. You don't want it, forget it. Chances are if you come back here again, it'll get passed again. Something is going on. We are part of it. We are a big part of it. We have our role to play. And it's not a role that has to be celebrated in The Lord of the Rings or in any other big novel. It's a role that gets celebrated in the universe, knowing that you took this sword and in one moment you benighted someone else. You cut through a dark moment. You brought light to a person who didn't have it. You brought kindness and goodness to someone who needed it. You became someone who transmitted this extraordinary energy of the universe to another soul. You can even become something so simple that you simply had a day that you appreciated. It can be that simple, that you actually walked outside and said thank you, that you looked at a tree and said, oh my God, that you, I think I've been doing, as I walk all the time, I look at the sidewalk and just go, it's a world of art. You know, oil dropping on the sidewalk, cracks in the sidewalk are more artful than anything you ever imagined. If you see them, if you look at them, everything is a work of art. All you have to do is, one, recognize it, acknowledge it, and go thank you. That's your sword. It's how you live your life. It's how you now affect yourself in the day, how you bring spiritual consciousness to daily consciousness and recognize that they're the same thing. People who don't do this, and there are legions, live lives influenced by, affected by, in some ways playing out the drama of universal impulse. That's what they do. Most people are that. And most people do it with a kind of profound ignorance. You might call it holy ignorance because they're still fulfilling some kind of universal design, but they are not appreciators of, aware of, conscious of who or what they are. I see it everywhere. Everywhere. The difference between being with those people and being with you is like it's a different world. People who are unconscious, living in ignorance, spread a great deal of sadness and difficulty and pain and suffering, and they create it for other people and they create it for themselves. You guys are the antidote. You are the antidote, if you want to be it. Again, the sword is yours. Go out into the world of ignorance and touch people and make things clearer. You may not do it through words, you may not do it through teaching, you can do it just by carrying that sword. I have a painting in my house in San Rafael, it's a Japanese print really, of a man clearly illuminated with a flute walking down the road. And it's a dark night, and there's a guy in the bushes ready to kill him with a sword. You don't know the outcome. You have no idea what the outcome of that moment is. But this man playing the flute, you get the feeling that that music is going to transform that guy with the sword, that the killing that's waiting to happen will not happen. But if it does happen, the guy with the flute will prevail. By that I mean he may get his head lopped off, but that music will keep playing. Your sword is like the flute. It's the thing you carry. Use it. Use it. Chop through the density of the stupidity of the world and hold it as a beacon of simple light and illuminate that which is around you. Be that presence. And I've said it now 400 different ways. Take what I said. Good luck. Any questions today?
I have a little question.
I have one right here, and then hold on. One. That's okay. One second.
I just want to know where I can see this. Are you posting it anywhere?
See the talk?
See, yeah.
Oh, it's on YouTube every day, every week. I mean, there's hundreds of them.
Okay.
You can either go to the website, brucerubin-class.com, or you can go to Bruce Joel Rubin, and you will find Bruce Joel Rubin, filmmaker, and you'll see this guy sitting here with an orange shirt every time with a background, and he talks. So it's always there. I mean, there are so many of them, you won't even know what to look at. And all I can tell you, I don't even know why they're there. You know, there were at one point a lot of people who watched them. There were no people, a lot of people, now hardly anybody again. But it's got its rhythms, and what it is, it speaks to the person who needs to hear it. so it's available. But hearing it 10 times won't change it. It really won't. It's already in place. It's already inside you.
Not this brain.
Yeah, don't. Rudy used to say, "Don't listen to me when I talk." He really did. He said, "Just sit inside," and he said, "The thing you need to hear will rise back up the moment you need to hear it, and that could be 10 years from now." And that has proven true for me because I've been at this for almost half a century. I've watched this stuff come back up, and it's really extraordinary. You'll know it when you need to know it. This thing is so finite. It's so limited. And when you get to my age, it hardly works at all. Really, I mean, you know, the memory thing for me is like almost, I mean, it's not gone completely, but, you know, I may end up as one of those teachers who has Alzheimer's. You know, it's gone. I mean, I'd probably still keep talking, but it's truly without memory. It would just be whatever emerges. It's part of the biological deconstruction is inevitable, but spiritual fullness doesn't go anywhere.
I remember the first time I came here, I saw right outside the door here. There's the Tibetan tapestry. I think they call it a thangka, Vajrayogini, and it kind of jumped off the wall at me, and always does, because it's an energy that I've been working with, I kind of woke up to that this morning, feeling a lot like she's done her work. For those who don't know, Vajrayogini takes toxins and poisons and excrement and drinks them and transmutes them into nectar. And I kind of got the message feeling sensation that's kind of what we're doing here.
It's exactly what we're doing here.
It's transmuting.
Absolutely.
Transmutation.
Rudy said, "Give me your shit and I'll give it back to you as nectar."
Okay. Yeah.
That's what he did. That's what we do. That's what this is. It's a transmutation of energy. Your shit is sweet to me. It really is. It's just energy that you can't handle or that you don't like in its current form. It has a toxic aspect to your mind, but it's not toxic, really. It is to you, perhaps, but once it gets pushed through the cleanser, the cleaner, whatever, the thing that makes it whole again and gets put back in you, it's fresh and new, and you can use it well. This is that work. Anyone else? Okay, thank you for coming. I'm hoping to be back here in, we're trying to work it out, at the beginning of September. If that doesn't happen, I'm going to miss a month. But we're coming from London, and I'm not directing the trip, so people may have already routed us differently. But if we can, we'll be back here. If not, we'll be back here at the end of September, and you'll hear about it. In 2 weeks, 2.5 weeks, we're going to be in Big Indian, which is upstate New York. I don't imagine any of you really will be able to. Well, I heard that you're coming in. But most of you, I know you probably won't be there, but it's always a very interesting retreat. Powerfully uncomfortable, but also wonderfully transformative. And the talks from that retreat will be online. And you can hear them. Keep at it. Keep at it. I'm telling you, what I said today is not casual. It's a real injunctive, an instruction. Take this seriously and use your skills. You have them. This, you would not have been given this empowerment, if you will. I hate that word, but you wouldn't have been given that if you weren't absolutely ready. And it went deep inside every one of you. Trust me, it went deep. Thank you. See you guys soon.